Begin on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis. The bottom line. We're still continuing these personal tefillas of the Amoraim. Rav Safra Bosa Tzloise Omar Hochi. All right, everybody with us? Okay. Rav Safra, when he would finish his davening, he would say as follows: Yiratzoinu Fanecha Hashem Elokeinu. May it be pleasing before you, Hashem, Shetosim Shalom the Pamalya Shel Mala, Ove Pamalya Shel Mata, that you install peace in the upper hosts and in the lower hosts. Meaning Rashi says he was actually davening that all the balances in the upper world should be right, because when the balances are off in the upper world, that causes wars down in our world. Meaning there are each nation has its minister up in the upper world, and when they don't get along, that results in war down here. Okay? Whatever that means. But then he adds, perhaps this is really all connected, and he says, and let there be peace among the students involved in your Torah. What's that? Bapamalya Shalmato, I understand. Well, actually, I had thought it was talking about the armies of the lower world, but Rashi says otherwise. Rashi says talking about the Chaburas HaChachamim, in which case this might simply be an explanation. He might just be elaborating, possibly. So it actually comes out, it is how I was thinking of saying, that actually the upper hosts will depend on the state of the Talmidim learning Torah. If there's peace among them, there will be peace in the upper worlds as well, which will be peace in the lower worlds as well. The boomerang effect that Reb Chaim Volozhiner talks about in the Nefesh HaChaim. What goes on down here affects what happens in the upper worlds, which affects what happens down here. So if the Talmidim are getting along, then the upper ministers are getting along, which means that nations are getting along, and there's peace in the world. So may there be peace among the Talmidim, bein oiskim lishma, bein oiskim shelo lishma. Whether those who are engaged in Torah for the right sake, and those who are engaged in Torah not for the right sake. Meaning generally when a person is learning Torah lishma, automatically there's peace. Might argue, arguing, if you see a very heated debate going on in this Medrash, that doesn't conflict with peace. On the contrary, that's how learning works, and that's how people grow very, very close, by yelling at each other and learning. So the Gemara says, in learning, even the Rebbe and his Talmud, even the father and his son, they become enemies, and they're at each other's throats, and they yell back and forth, but when they finish the Seder, they feel very good about themselves and about each other. So when people are learning the right way, when people are learning Lishma, you can assume that there's going to be peace. When people are learning Shalei Lishma, it can get problematic, because it can become an issue of ego and pride, and therefore all kinds of ulterior elements can get involved, and there could be real rift there. So then he sticks in a tefillah. So there's two levels. As long as we have Talmidim while learning Shalai Lishma, let there at least be peace. Let the egos not get in the way. But he adds another tefillah, and let it reach a situation where all those who are learning Shalai Lishma will ultimately learn Lishma. And those who are Talmidim of Rav Aaron Cutler tell about how fiery things used to get in his shir. He's mamish, he would be yelling back and forth. And one time, Talmud asked some question, and he started yelling at the Talmud. He's yelling and yelling. Meanwhile, the Talmud stalked out. So, as Rav Aaron is continuing his tirade, he finally yelled, "Throw him out!" So they told him he left already. So Rav Aaron said, "So bring him back in and throw him out." That was how it went. And then everybody loved it. A certain Talmud was once offended. The first time he came to talk to Rav Shach in learning, he suggested some idea, and Rav Shach said, "Ah!" So the Talmud was a bit offended. So they came back to Rav Shach. They told him it was a new Talmud. He was offended. He said, "Hi, tell him that he should take a drink of a cup of wine before coming to talk to me and learning. You have to come with the right spirit." Okay. So again, that's the level of when everyone's learning Lishma and they're in the heatedness of the learning. But then when learning Shalei Lishma can really be an issue of ego and pride getting in the way. Okay. Next. Rabbi Alexandri Bosatz Loisei Omar Hochi. When Rabbi Alexandri would finish his tefillah, he would say as follows. Well, that's one cause. There can be many causes. He was just working on the one factor that he was a Rosh Yeshiva, so he was working on the one factor that he was responsible for. But there can be many factors. The truth is that Klal Yisrael in general, are there enough people learning Torah in Klal Yisrael? Are there enough people keeping mitzvahs in Klal Yisrael? Maybe the decay around the world reflects the decay in Klal Yisrael. And the truth is maybe the rift around the world also reflects the rift in Klal Yisrael. All elements... Rabbi Alexandri Bosatz Loiseo Mahochi. Rabbi Alexandri, at the end of his tefillah, would say as follows: Yerotzoy milfonecho Hashem Eleikeinu. May it be pleasing before you, Hashem, Sheta'amideinu bekeren oira, that you position us in a keren of light. Right now we'll translate that as in a corner of light. And do not position us in a corner of darkness. What's he asking for exactly? So simply understood, what he meant was as follows. Ideally we would ask, why be in a corner at all? Be in a nice spacious place of light. But no. Rashi and the Maharshal seem to be understanding that he's davening from a Gullus perspective. We're in Gullus. And I'm accepting that. I'm accepting that we're in Galus, but in Galus there can be more favorable situations and less favorable situations. So he's asking, show us your grace in Galus. Even while we're in Galus, even while we're distanced, let us at least see your favor. Let it be a pleasant existence in Galus. Not so. That's why corner denotes we are in a tight spot. Corner is a tight spot. We are in a tight spot, but let us at least be in favorable conditions. And then it naturally follows, va'al yid velibeinu, va'al yechshecho einenu. Let our hearts not be pained, and let our eyes not be darkened. So that's how Rashi and the Maharshal explain this Gemara. The Tzlach has a different understanding of the word keren. Keren can mean a corner, but it can also mean a horn, as in greatness, prestige, right? Karnoi Torum, we say about David. Esemach David, Abdecha Melos, Esemach, Vekarnoi Torum, Yishua Secha. Prestige. Karen denotes prestige. So he says something very interesting. He says Rabbi Alexandri was a judge. He was a dayan. Or in other words, he was the authority in his area. So he said, I have prestige. Let my prestige be a prestige of light, and not a prestige of darkness. Meaning, in other words, he was saying he lived with the pachad, with the fear that you don't really see so much today, the fear of the consequences of being a leader. As a leader, he understood that there is immense responsibility upon him, and the way that Tzlach put it, it was leader is one of two things. They're either headed for light or for darkness. It's either Gan Eden or Gehenna. For a person to be leading Klal Yisrael, you need a lot of efforts to dedicate yourself selflessly and to make the right decisions, to really bear the tzibur, bear as in B-E-A-R, bear the tzibur properly. So he was davening to be zoiche, to do his job faithfully and correctly. You see, when you have leaders who are paid who knows how much money, no idea, the Gemara says, woe is the generation whose leaders don't know the distress of its people. So forget the whole battle in the Torah world. That's another story. But just the fact that these people are coming and explaining why it's best for everybody, talk about the irreligious, that the poor families struggle a little more. It'll be one thing if these leaders can show personal example, by living a life of self-sacrifice. When you have them, they're set up. They have nice, comfortable salaries, and they understand the sacrifices that the public need to be making. That's what we're talking about here. Whereas a true Jewish leader is the example of Reb Chaim Brisker, for example. Reb Chaim Brisker, when in his town there was a big fire, and he was working on getting together funds to rehabilitate the town, all throughout that period he didn't sleep on his bed. He slept on the floor. He said, as long as every last person in town is not back in a bed, I'm not going to sleep on my bed. That's a Jewish leader. A Jewish leader who senses the needs and the tzar of the people he's leading. So that's basically what he's saying here. That the essence of a Jewish leader is a person who carries the tzar of the tzibur upon him. That's basically the definition of what a Jewish leader is. Anything else might be Jewish, might be a leader, but he's not a Jewish leader. Okay. I'm sorry. Oh, right. Moshe Rabbeinu, that's right. The essence is Noise Bo'il. Yeah. Iked Amri, others say, Harav Hanune Matzlila. No, this was not Rabbi Alexandri's tefillah, that was Rav Hanune's tefillah. Rabbi Alexandri Bosar de Matzli, after Rabbi Alexandri would finish davening, he would say as follows, Omar Hochi, he would say as follows, Riboin Ho'oilamim, Master of the World, Golui V'yodua Lefanecho, it's known to you, Sheritzoineinu Lasois Ritzoinecho. This is a very interesting tefillah. You know that essentially we want to be doing your will. Umima Akiv, who is it that's holding us back? Sa'oyo Shabi'isa, the sourdough in the dough. That's an expression for the Yitzhara. We'll explain that soon. Vishibud Malchias, and the fact that we are subject to foreign rule, to foreign suppression. Meaning, we'd love to be getting ahead, but what should we do? We have Yitzhara beating up on us. And we also have the foreign rule, is the fact that we're subject to foreign rule, that don't, we're not in position to just simply dedicate ourselves to Torah and Mitzvahs the way we would like. So therefore, Yiratzon Lufanecho Shetatzileinu Miyadam, may it be your will, Hashem, that you save us from them, V'noshuv La'asayis Chukei Ritzoinecho B'Levav Shalem. And then, we'll come back and we'll perform your will wholeheartedly. So what's he saying? Basically what he's saying is, look Hashem, we would love to be doing everything you want, just we have challenges. Take away the challenges and then we'll do it all right. Sounds like a funny tefillah, right? Tell Hashem, you want to see me perform? Take away my Yitzhara and watch me soar. I'll do really well. What kind of tefillah is that? About that we say Shkoyach. So the answer, we're going to see there's a lot of profundity to this tefillah. But the answer is, first of all, that that's not quite accurate. Man was meant to perform without the Yitzhara as we have it. But Victor Miller said, for example, the truth is, he said that the really essentially the purpose of Adam HaRishon was before the Yitzhara got mixed into him. The purpose of Adam HaRishon was to live without the Yitzhara. The Yitzhara was kind of like this abstract thing that he went looking for. For whatever reason, it's a separate sugya. But really, to be living without Yetzer Hara, the test of this world would not be battling the Yetzer Hara. Really, the test of this world should have been, and on the higher level is, just to be maximizing yourself and pushing yourself to the limit. Without having the obstacles of the Yetzer Hara. That's enough of a test. Am I pushing myself to the limit? That's where the way Rabbi Miller would put it, would be the issue of Bechira would be not between choosing between right and wrong, but choosing between good and better. Always trying to maximize my spiritual opportunities to make the absolute most I can out of myself. What's that? Not quite. Choosing between good and bad is not the same as pushing. Not exactly. Laziness certainly is an element of Yetzer Hara, but still, there's no end to how much a person can push himself. And the truth is, that's also the Malachim. It's also not just an issue of that. It's an issue of making the right decisions, using the right discretion to always make the decisions that will maximize your spiritual opportunities, which are often issues of exerting mental efforts to making the right decision. So you're right. You might say, in a way, that the only Yetzer Hara we would have had to contend with is laziness. But it's an issue of being energetic and even more energetic, pushing and pushing and pushing ourselves without having to contend with the obstacles of the Yetzer Hara. But Lamaisa, we're in a situation where we do have to contend with it. So yes, he's davening to be saved from the Yetzer Hara in order to be able to maximize spiritual opportunities. But the truth is, we have to realize a couple of things here. There's a few very, very chashuva lessons inherent in this tefillah. So first of all, he's saying, essentially, we want to do it. We want to do your will. Just there's some sourdough mixed into us, and we have foreign rulers, which really means current life in the real world, which keeps us from getting ahead. It keeps us busy. It keeps us preoccupied. So there's a chashuva lesson here, because actually, this is the way the Chovei Salava says this also. The Yetzirah is not us. The Yetzirah is not us. The Yetzirah is something that is blended into our personality to the extent that we feel like it's us. But it's actually a foreign force. We are our neshama, which only wants the right thing. When you feel like I want to sin, it's actually not you. It's a foreign force. It's looking to trip you up. It's an enemy that managed to infiltrate your lines in such a good way that you actually think it's you. But really it's not. Really it's not. It makes you feel like it's you. That's the Chovei Salava put it is Hanimsach Imcha Bekoiches Nafshecha. He manages to blend himself in with you so well that you think it's you. You think your ego is you. You think your anger is you. You think your lust is you. It's all not you. It's all really some foreign element that's mixed in. Therefore, when you think of it that way, you feel yourself starting to be tempted. You're starting to be provoked or whatever it is, and you say to yourself, ain't no one going to tell me what to do. You want to be pushed around by some foreign element who mixes into you and tells you what to do? It's not you. You don't want that. So that's what he's saying here. We want to do what's right. Just, we have other foreign elements mixed into us. So can he blame it on the infiltrator? The truth is that that's really the next point that the Mefarshim makes here. Avdesla discusses this. He says, actually, what is Rav Alexandri expressing in this tefillah? What he's expressing is, Hashem, look, it's not our fault. It's all right, it's messing us up. It's not our fault. Can you say that to Hashem? Of course, Hashem made the Yetzirah for you to overcome it. What are you coming and telling Hashem? You made the Yetzirah. You mixed him into us. It's not our fault. So, this is a famous concept. This is a famous concept that the truth is that Hashem might sometimes take that into account. It was a difficult test. When Hashem is judging a person, and a person failed, and there could be two ways of judging. Hashem could either say, you failed, I know it was difficult, but you were required to overcome, and therefore you're going to be punished. Or Hashem could say, I know it was difficult, and therefore I'm going to take down the punishment. I'm going to mitigate it. Now both are essentially correct. Right? It is correct to say, I don't know, tit for tat. Stories are in, stories are here. It wasn't an oinus. You should have not done it. You could have not done it, and therefore you're going to be punished with full severity. Or it also makes sense to say, yeah, but at the end of the day, I'm going to take into account that it was more difficult and therefore it will be a lighter punishment than someone else who did it without such a difficult test. So Rav Dessler says, well, this is not just Rav Dessler, famous concept. He says, yes, Hashem sometimes deals this way and sometimes deals that way. What does it depend on? So it doesn't depend on his moods. It depends on us. This is the famous concept of what Chazal say. You decide the approach that Hashem is going to take in your judgment by the approach that you take to others. If your approach to others is tit for tat, exact, you know, once you mess up with me, you're dead, so Hashem will say, okay, I can do that too. But if your approach is, I let things go by, okay, he did it, I can understand him, I'll take the circumstances into account, etc., etc. Hashem will take that into account too. That's also the pshat. Chazal say that if a person is done others l'kavzchus, min Hashemayim yidunu l'kavzchus, Hashem will judge him favorably. If you judge others favorably, Hashem will judge you favorably. Everybody asks, what does that mean that Hashem will judge you favorably? Judging favorably means giving people the benefit of the doubt. You don't know exactly what happened, so you judge them favorably. But Hashem knows everything. What benefit of the doubt is there? What doubt is there? But the answer is this again. Judging favorably doesn't necessarily have to involve a doubt. It involves, am I going to take circumstances into account or not? What's my attitude going to be? Is it going to be an attitude of strict exactitude? Or is it going to be a bit of a looser approach? It was difficult. Alright, we'll let it go. And that depends very much on the standards that man determines for himself based on his behavior with others. Oh, that's it. Or even more than that, not just take care of it, Hashem will act the same way with you, and He'll let your iniquities pass. You let offenses go by you, Hashem will let your offenses towards Him go by Him. Rabbi Yonah says, "Ze Pesach Tikva Nichbod Me'oid." This is a great opening of hope, because Rabbi Yonah is tough. He elaborates in Shari Tshuva to show how when you're facing heavenly judgment, forget about it, you don't stand a chance. Rabbi Yonah has a very hard-nosed approach. You don't stand a chance with heavenly judgment. He elaborates to make that very clear. And then, he finishes it off by saying, but there's a very, very great backdoor that you can use, and that's this backdoor. You can decide to take down the whole level of Hashem's attitude towards you by adopting such an attitude towards others.
What if somebody, for example, is a kleptomaniac? And he can't help, I mean, for whatever reason, I mean, I'm just taking this as an example, but every so often, he steals something, puts something in his pocket, you know, he can't help himself. But yet, supposedly, he's a firm Jew.
Well, there's a different issue of protecting the tzibur. There's an issue of protecting the tzibur which doesn't really have to do with, I'm not judging the person, but the tzibur has to be protected. You have to do what halacha mandates should be done to protect the tzibur. That has to be done with sensitivity. You can't just have people taking the law into their own hands and deciding how to handle it. It has to be done according to halachic guidelines. But protecting the when the tzibur needs to be protected, we don't say, well, understand the guy. That's the liberal approach, judicial approach, which means that why should we kill someone just because he killed others? Let him stay outside. If he kills a few more people, it's not his fault. He had a rough background. He had a rough childhood. We have to protect the tzibur. But at the same time, protecting the tzibur is something that has to be done with very delicate discretion. It's not something that people can decide to take into their own hands. It's a very delicate issue.
Actually, if I could just...
But briefly, because we've got to move on.
Where I lived previously, somebody called me up and said, the shulach came to go up, and the woman went to get the checkbook, wrote a check, and after the shulach left, her pocketbook was lighter than it was before.
Oy.
When I say, call the police and let's report it, you're reporting a frum person, supposedly.
All right, it's difficult.
Public authorities.
It's difficult to relate to individual cases. I certainly can't respond on such a thing, but a good idea would be to call the Rav and ask whether you should call the police.
The Rav happens
right
to say no.
Then it could be that there was halachic discretion there. We have to realize that these things are subject to a lot of discretion. But again, we can't get into the particulars of individual cases. But what we will say is that these things are often subject to very, very fine particulars, which not anybody can just take upon themselves to decide. Okay. Fine. We move on. Rave. Rave basar tzloisei omar hochi. Rave, after his tefillah, would say as follows. Elokai, my Hashem, ad sheloi noitzarti eini kedai. So this should sound familiar, not on a once a month basis, not on the daily basis, but once a year basis. My Hashem, before I was created, I wasn't deserving to be created. Va'achshav shenoitzarti ki'ilu loi noitzarti. Now that I have been created, I'm still as deserving as before I was created. I'm not any more deserving. Ofar ani bechaye, I'm dirt in my lifetime. Kal v'chomer b'misasi, and all the more so in my death. Harei ani lefanecho kichli mole busha uchlima, and I stand before you like a vessel full of shame. Yiratzoyim lefanecho, so the only thing I can ask of you is, the only thing I have the right to ask of you is, Rav is saying, may it be your will, Hashem Elokai, sheloi echatoid, that I don't sin anymore. And whatever I did sin, moreik birachamecho harabim, cleanse in your great mercy, but not through suffering and through bad illnesses. Now we know this from Yom Kippur. And Taka the Gemara concludes, "Vahainu vidui de Rav Hamnun Ezuti b'yemei de Kippur." This was the text that Rav Hamnun Ezuti would say on Yom Kippur. What's that? Oh, that's right. Those of us who are zeichet to say that every day, right? So now, let's also note what's being said here. We have to realize something. What is he saying here? He's not just coming and saying, "Oh, I'm a nobody." There's an important point being brought across here. It's not we're not just meant to say we're nobodies, because then we would never achieve anything. That's like the Chavis Alvavah says. The person who just really thinks he's nothing, that's not another. Every ox thinks he's nothing. You see a 7-year-old boy leading an ox through the street. Why isn't the ox just knocking him over and running away? Because the ox doesn't think he's stronger than him. The ox thinks that the boy really controls him. So he says the person who thinks he's nothing, that's the meat of an ox. That's not the anova that's always so praised. What Rava is saying here is as follows. Rava lived with the keen awareness of all the things that he was achieving. He knew what he was achieving. He knew that he was the God Lador. You see that in plenty of places around Shas. He knew that he was a God Lador, and he asserted himself when he needed to assert himself. But he lived with the awareness of Hashem. He lived with the awareness that everything that he was getting from Hashem, he wasn't deserving of, despite all of his great achievements. Yes, he knew that he had achieved great things. But when he was living with the awareness of who Hashem is, it's all inadequate. And yes, he lived with this constant feeling of inadequacy, despite the fact that he knew everything he had achieved, because it was always with that keen consciousness of Hashem's immensity. So he still felt like nothing. And therefore he says, first of all, Ofarani b'chaye, I'm dirt in my life. Dirt meaning, he meant literally, I'm dirt as in, Adam is Adama. Man is Adama, man is dirt. And therefore Rava very, very much felt that I should be achieving a lot more. I should be doing much more than I'm doing if I want to be able to pay Hashem back for all his kindliness. Just the fact that I'm physical holds me back. So therefore he says, Ofarani b'chaye, I'm dirt. Right? It's just so much you can get, you know, 150 pounds of flesh moving. And then he says, all I am before you is like a vessel full of shame and embarrassment. Meaning, Rava had, let's say, 3 sins. I don't know how many sins he had. He had 3 sins. Again, when he realizing who Hashem is, the mortification that he felt with each sin filled his consciousness. This is how people lived in earlier times. The tiniest sin by them filled their consciousness for the rest of their lives. We see that there was an Amora who one time said the bracha when his tefillin weren't positioned right. Apparently he should have been a little more careful. His tefillin, the strap of his tefillin were backwards when he said the bracha. So he said the bracha, it was a bracha levatola. Most of us would say, Baruch Sheng Void Malchus HaLevad, oh well, and move on. He fasted for 40 days. It says he fasted until his face became blackened. You can imagine it, they didn't have all that many sins if this is what they were doing for each little sin. But what's the idea? The idea is, that they lived with such a conscious awareness of what it means to be privileged to be in Hashem's service, and how you're always walking on eggshells, and how any tiny mess up is an unbelievable sacrilege. Now, if we would try to operate this way, we'd go over the deep end. They were able to really live with the consciousness of what a privilege it is, and to feel exalted, and therefore to feel that any mess up was a terrible mistake. By us, it's a little different. We have to take a little bit of a more forgiving approach to ourselves, and Hashem also does, because we can only handle what we can handle. But this was how these people lived. Any sin filled their consciousness for many years to come. Okay, what else? Mar Breg Deravina. Now this will sound even more familiar, most familiar of what we've said till now.
The way you're describing these people, is any different the way that you would describe the Gadol of today? And that maybe the regular guys at those times are like the regular guys today?
The regular people at those time, I don't know. The great people of those time were not like the Gdolim of today. They were a completely different league. My brother once asked about Avigdor Miller in the question and answer period in the Shiurim, can a person become like the Tanaim and Amoraim? Can a person in our times call like the Tanaim and Amoraim? And he answered to the effect of, in a very, very, just a brilliant way, off the cuff, the essence of his answer was, whatever you think the Tanaim and Amoraim were, you can become. Meaning, if what we're describing here makes you think of Gedolim of today, and it might not be that far from what they are, then the truth is that Enoch and Ami. When we're talking about Amoraim, we have to realize that we're talking about levels of greatness that are completely beyond our comprehension. And everything that we could comprehend, everything that we think is the epitome of greatness, is probably describing either the greats of our generation or of a generation ago. It's true. It's true. Okay. Right, Rishonim kemalachim, anu kibnei adam. That's literal. If they were like angels, we're like people. If they're like people, we're like donkeys. That's mamish literal. In the level of their conscience, the level of the consciousness that they lived with. Okay. So now, what did he daven? Elokai, nitzor lishonim ero. My Hashem, please guard my tongue from evil. My lips from speaking falsehood. Vilim kalilai nafshi sidoim. And to all those who curse me or offend me, let me remain silent. He's davening for help in this most fundamental area of avodah, to remain silent when I'm cursed or offended. Venafshi keofol akol tiyeh. Let me be like dirt towards everybody. They'll trample on me and I don't respond. Pesach libi b'seirosecho. Open my heart in your Torah. Okay, we're going to have to elaborate on this. It'll probably have to wait for next time already, but let's finish. Over mitzvaysecho tildorf nafshi. Let me pursue your mitzvahs. V'tatzileni mi pegaro. And save me from any bad incidents. Umiyetzara. Umiyishara. From a bad wife. We'll have to talk about this also. Umiyikolois hamisrach shesovel oilam. And any other bad occurrences that happen to the world. Anybody who has evil plans against me, please ruin their counsel and thwart their thoughts. And may the words of my mouth and the thoughts of my heart be pleasing to you, Hashem. Okay, we just presented it and translated it. We'll have to discuss it next time, Hashem. Okay.